Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, this is your host, John Deiter from Business Solutions Radio. Actually, I'm happy to announce we've got a couple of new sponsors going forward, Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona chapter. And our new theme is, it's just good business. Quick note, actually, I think Adam knows this, but May of 2013 is when Conscious Capitalism was incorporated. So we've got a five-year anniversary going on here. And Scott McIntosh started that movement. A few others of us joined him as founding members, and it's been a great 5 years so far. So first, a quick word about my business, John Deiter Solutions. I help business owners get three things: vision, traction, and healthy. Vision, getting on the same page with where you're going and how you're getting there. Traction, executing every day toward that vision with discipline and accountability. And healthy, building a cohesive team that enjoys working together in a great culture. I'm certified by Conscious Capitalism Arizona as a conscious business consultant in that I incorporate the principles of conscious capitalism in my work with clients. And I do that by helping them implement a complete management system with these simple tools we call the Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS. So enough about me. I'm really excited to kick off what will be a series of broadcasts now with those sponsors of Conscious Capitalism and Max 6. Actually, we'll be broadcasting from the Max 6 studio starting in June. And first, I've got two guests with me. First, I'd like to introduce Karen Nowicki, who's the president of Business Radio X here in Phoenix, a great connector, a great person. And because she has a high interest in conscious capitalism, I invited her to be on the mic with us today. So welcome, Karen, and thanks for doing the extra duty.
Yep, thank you. I'm here anyway, aren't I? That's right. As well have an opportunity to interject. And very happy that you have introduce me to Conscious Capitalism AZ and Max 6, because now we have CCAZ and Max 6 sponsoring the studio, which we're all very, very excited about. So thank you, John, for that introduction.
That's great. And now our special guest, Adam. Thanks for wading through those introductions. But Adam Goodman is our final guest from Goodman Interior Structures, and he sent a bio here. Just a little bit about him. He's president and CEO of Goodman's Interior Structures, the third generation to lead the family business, following the tradition of innovation established by his father and grandfather. Adam used his leadership roles to help Goodman's adapt to changing markets and anticipate opportunities for growth. Under his leadership, Goodman's has developed many innovative programs to give back to the community. And I'm not going to read the list, Adam, because I want to hear about a couple of those directly as we talk. He's also been very active in leadership positions in the community. And again, a long list of those. A couple of them, Conscious Capitalism, he serves on the board. He's a great speaker. He's done some talks, and I'll refer to those when we talk a little bit. At Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting, I mention that only because I think there's a little bit in his background that goes into that journalism aspect. And a whole lot of others. Jewish Community Center, Greater Phoenix, Jewish Federation.
Blah, 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 blah.
On and on and on and on. So after that, Adam, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here. So your new tagline is going to be, it's just good business?
It's just good business, yep.
So Goodman's has a trademark on the name, the word good.
Oh, really?
You can't use the word good without...
Oh really?
I got lawyers already on the way over here.
The word good. I didn't know that. We're in trouble.
A lot of legal work we went to get through, but it's our word now.
I'm sure. Well, we're going to have to settle with Conscious Capitalism Arizona then somehow.
We're taking them down. We're going to take them down.
Can we say it's just Goodman business?
It's just Goodman business. It's just Goodman business.
Can we do that?
That's fine.
We'll have to pay every time we
say
it.
That's fine.
That's perfect. Yeah. So I see... again, a lot of background, and you've done some talks on so forth, but have you always worked in the family business? You're third generation now. How did that come to be?
As a child, I worked a lot in the family business. I did a lot of, not child labor. I guess that sounds wrong. I did a lot of spring break, summer break, winter break, working in the warehouse, helping out here and there. And the one thing I learned from that entire experience is how desperately, I did not want to be into this family business. It was not. It did not endear me to the industry. That's for sure.
Yeah.
As I went to college, I went to the University of Texas and thought deeply about what it is I really did want to do. And the one thing that was really most interesting to me, as you alluded to in the introduction, was newspapers. And I guess we should state this goes back into the 90s.
When there still were newspapers.
Right. It sounds like a quaint notion now, somebody yearning to be in the newspaper business. But I did. And I went to work for Gannett Newspapers, and they had me on a fast-track program going around the country, working my way up. But the idea was if I did everything right, by the age of 30, I'd be a publisher in Chillicothe, Ohio, or Gainesville, Georgia. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Gainesville, Florida, but a sweet gig. That was Gainesville, Georgia. Keep going on that corporate ladder. And that's when my father said, you know, you might want to try coming back to the family business.
You might want to try, right?
Yes.
And so you did.
And so I did. He made a compelling case about if you ever want to know what it's like to own your own business, now's the time to figure out, because before it's too late, before you've advanced too far in your career and it's too late. So he said, his prescient words were, I guess not so prescient words, where you can always go back to newspapers.
If they were still there.
Exactly.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, I worked for a company back in Chicago, a manufacturer that was a third generation family business, and really came through some strange evolutionary kinds of times where, you know, the first generation builds up all the relationships and the culture. It's a family business, and the people know the owners, and it got to the second generation and almost ready to pass to the third. And there were some challenges there. We got to be pretty sizable. I actually was CFO and then president there for a while. But getting out to the plants and sharing, trying to maintain the family culture that was built up since 1932 was a challenge. It unionized, and it just became a little more adversarial. It was really hard to carry on that. How have you found the culture at Goodman's changing over the years?
It's an interesting question. I spend very little energy trying to make it feel like a family business. I don't think of it as a family business in that sense. It's just a business, and the people here feel like family. And but the mythology of a, you know, ma and pa kind of thing, and you know, it just doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't feel authentic, frankly. And so we don't really play that up too much. And the interesting thing about being here in a third generation family business relative to Chicago is there's always somebody new coming into town who's never heard of us. In fact, hold on right now. Someone just came moved to Phoenix and they have no idea who we are. And so there wasn't that ability to establish relationships back in the, you know, early in the 50s that are withstanding today. That just, not to say we don't have long-term relationships. It's just that the town just keeps filling up with new people who have no history with us.
Right.
So give us the history, if you could. Tell us about Goodman's, because it is not a company that I was familiar with until I had an opportunity through John's introduction to know that you're coming today. So give us a little bit of a background about who y'all are and how you serve.
My grandfather had a furniture store in Germantown, Pennsylvania, going back to the 30s, actually. It's a residential furniture store. My dad and the family lived upstairs, and the furniture store was downstairs. And it was open 7 days a week, and someone would ring the buzzer, and they'd run downstairs and help them out with whatever they needed.
Wow.
My grandfather had asthma, and his doctor told him, if you don't move west, then you're not going to live to see, you know, 60 years old.
Wow.
My grandfather lived to see 90 years old by moving west, and the doctor died long before that. That's another bit of family lore there.
That's interesting, sure.
So they moved out, and my grandfather bought a truckload of surplus military furniture, sold it, got another truckload of surplus military furniture and sold it, and you just keep doing that, rinse and repeat, for 54 years.
Yeah, that's actually how the Max Gerber got started in the plumbing business. He would buy plumbing fixtures, supplies, and get a truckload or a trunk load and go out in the community and sell it. And then ultimately he bought a couple of plants that manufactured the stuff and built up the business over a number of years. It's interesting that you use the trunk or a truckload of stuff to start a business. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Another thought that I had as you were sharing your story, there is another business owner who hosts her show out of our studio. It's called Best of Health with Barb Regis, and she's a physician's assistant here serving Insight Technologies. And her show is really all around being an advocate for health. She is a third generation physician's assistant in this case. And her father, I don't think it was Germantown, but it was Pennsylvania, small town. Her father's doctor's office was downstairs. So in the middle of the night, if someone needed him, the phone would ring and she would be woken up knowing that he's going to be caring for somebody any moment. And she could hear the front door, the doorbell ring, and dad would go get them. So I'm fascinated that you shared that, because she has just written a book, and I was kind of proofing it and giving her some feedback. And I was fascinated how that small town feel is. And we're talking about the same state, quite possibly even maybe the same community. I'll have to go back and ask her. It's fascinating. Fascinating. And that was her love. She also didn't start off in just medicine. I think she was a music teacher. She wanted to do anything but she has since found her way back. I think it's a second or third career for her. Now she's been a physician's assistant for years and is where her heart is. So it's fascinating how these family legacies have a way of creeping in on us, even with the Phoenix Business Radio, to be quite honest with you. As an executive leadership coach these last 7 years, I knew that if I wanted to have a business to sell at the end of my time, the way that I had built up my coaching practice, it really wasn't. The doors would close. I could refer people, but it was nothing that I felt like I could pass on to somebody. But part of why I chose Business Radio X is because I have two adult kids and a 10-year-old, and there's quite possible that one of them might want to continue the legacy of broadcasting the way that we do it. So I'm on the early side of that, but also looking toward my exit strategy as I start in year one, which I hadn't done previously.
I think the lesson here today is you got to live upstairs from the studio.
That's it, right?
I got to figure that out. And fortunately, in our Phoenix, Metro Phoenix area, we now have those kind of work-home options when we didn't have those back even in the 90s, for that matter. So yeah, I'll have to start looking for that kind of spot. Maybe Max 6 will let me physically move my family in addition to the studio.
They're very cool about that kind of thing.
I'll see what I can do. I've already got the gym downstairs and a shower. What more do I need? There's a kitchen.
Well, the other building, the major tenant's going to be vacating. Maybe they'll build some apartments for the startup entrepreneurs and people that rent the space to have a place.
10-year-olds love office parks.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That would be a great time. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine? We got completely sidetracked, but it was a lot of fun.
I'm going to do that to you.
No, I love that. Keep us on our toes. So how did the business come west then?
Well, this is where there's no clear air, no asthma, and he was able to come out here and build the business from there. My father and uncle joined the business in the early 60s. It was originally called Arizona Office Equipment, really for the only reason that my grandfather wanted to be first in the phone book.
There we go.
I guess we should describe for listeners.
what a phone book is.
Something that some of us remember. Sure, the phone book.
It still gets dumped on my driveway about every 6 months or a year or so.
It goes direct to the right recycle bin in my house.
I can't bring myself to use it.
Between newspapers and phone books, I think we need a glossary for this podcast and accompanying study guide.
Right. A history lesson or something, and so you started from scratch when they came out here, basically, right?
Completely started from scratch. There's a great story of there was a flood wiped out all the furniture, like one of these 100-year floods that seems to happen every few years around here.
And
that was it. The inventory was gone. And my grandfather had made friends with a woodworker down the street who said, look, I'll repair these things one at a time, and you can pay me when you sell them. There was a convent here on 19th Avenue somewhere, if anybody knows the name or who that was. And the nun said, look, we'll buy all of it from you just as you fix it. We'll buy. And that saved the company right there in those early days.
Gosh, that's a cool story, too.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's wild. So how roll forward here now, and you're obviously active in conscious capitalism. When did you first kind of put two and two together where, hey, what I'm doing is really fits under that umbrella? Or how did you get exposed to conscious capitalism?
I was in the business for about 10 years after my father recalled me from the newspaper business, was learning the industry, learning the business, and found it fun and challenging and enjoyable and all those things. But it didn't quite fill a hole or fill a purpose that I had been looking for. I thought deeply about what it was about newspapers that that interested me so much. And the conclusion I came to was that newspapers, I liked them. I loved them, really, because of the impact they make on a community. I joke about newspapers, but I still feel this way, very strongly about it, by the way, that newspapers, the role they play in democracy and the impact they make in the community is unmatched in any other form of media. And I wanted to be a part of that. And coming back in the furniture industry, my purpose seemed to be just selling stuff.
And more furniture. Right?
Just more, yeah. Like more than you did yesterday. And that wasn't particularly fulfilling. And so in the early 2000s, I pivoted the whole company's purpose, the reasons for its existence, to be about what we can do to impact the community. Just the way I was able to do in the newspaper industry, I was able to reposition the furniture industry. I should say that people thought I was nuts. Well, you look at me quizzically, but come on. I mean, who do you think you are? You're in the furniture business, for goodness sakes. Where you go make an impact in the community? Get out of here. And these are people, the other important thing to understand is people who had worked at the company longer than I'd been alive, who had seen me grow up and watched me as a snot-nosed kid work in the warehouse or however exposure they had to me. I probably wasn't on my best behavior.
So now you come in with this idea that they think is half-cocked. And
exactly.
Yeah.
And we've seen this before. It's going to be some big idea that's going to just go away. And so that there were some headwinds to face. And, it's one thing to have an advantage and disadvantages. By having a mature company, I had the luxury and advantage of having a stable organization. I didn't have to worry about where tomorrow's next check was coming from and paying payroll and all that. So I had the luxury of being able to sort of experiment on this kind of stuff. By the same token, it's a big ship that has set it in its direction, set a course, and changing it's awfully hard. So yeah. I'm aware of the blessing and curse that I was dealing with.
Right. I saw the, and maybe I'll interject this here now. You have a couple of videos out on the internet, and one of those was a Sum and Substance talk that you did presenting your story. And I remember you talking about the time you presented your new purpose to the employees, and you pulled a little note out of your thing and said, here's what I found on the floor after everybody left. And they said something like, I should have worn my boots today. It's getting pretty deep.
Oh, no.
BS is so deep in here.
Yeah.
I still have that note.
That was a pretty good story. But, you have to. Yeah.
Does that note probably drives you?
Completely. It made me double down right then and there. Like, if I thought, well, I can just declare our purpose and everyone will hear it and they'll carry me off on their shoulders and that's going to be it. That if I hadn't, first of all, I could read the audience and they were just looking at me
same way, right?
Like they were waiting for the English portion of the program to begin. Like I was just, they had no idea what I was talking about. But then seeing that note made me realize, oh no, I gotta keep going at this. I gotta push harder on it and not let up. I probably, frankly, would have let up and thought, my work is done here and moved on.
So, right.
So
one of the things we teach. When I'm working with a client, we talk about some things you have to do to be a good leader and to set the example and set the stages. Like being a good parent, you have to say it 7 times before they really hear it for the first time. So, and don't give up after 1 or 2 when you get those comments.
Yes.
And things. Where
and is it only
just,
7? Really? It's around, obviously, consistently
right.
Living and breathing and reminding of the message.
If my kids are listening, clean your room.
Right.
Well, but that's hard also to do because it was up to you to carry the ball and get that message out and let that permeate through the organization. So what kinds of things did you do to get that embedded?
I started with the leadership team and made sure the leadership team was aligned and believed what I believed. And that they were pretty quick adopters. And if they weren't, then, it was clear this wasn't a good fit for you.
Sure.
So that happened pretty quickly. Then to get the rest of the company was a lot of different types of communication, a lot of written communication, speaking. I write a lot of handwritten notes home to employees. Whenever I see them do something or hear about them do something that's aligned, that's making an impact in the community, it's aligned with our purpose, I'll write a note to them, and I want their families to see it. I want their families to be proud of the impact that they're making on the community. And, of course, I want to express my gratitude as well. And right. So you kind of add all that up. I'm constantly drawing a line for people, no matter where you are in the organization, between the work you do every day, the paper pushing or the box pushing or whatever it is, and how you're making an impact on the community. And that's one of the biggest jobs I have.
Sure.
Can you give us some specific examples as to how your company and employees are serving the community? I mean, I know John alluded to some of it in the beginning, but what are some of the most memorable things or things that are happening now that you can share with us?
There's direct ways and there's indirect ways.
Okay.
The work we do in office furniture every day is making an impact. We do a lot of work with hospitals, almost every hospital in the state. And we know that the work we're doing is making patients more comfortable and caregivers safer and families more comfortable. Well, you have that combination of patient, caregiver, and family in a better environment. That's going to impact the healing process.
Yeah,
accelerating healing, that's changing the community right there. And so whether you're paying an invoice to a vendor, you're receiving in the warehouse, whatever you're doing, if you're touching a healthcare customer, you're helping patients to heal, and that's something you can be proud of. We do a lot of work with all the community colleges and universities in town, and we have proven with empirical data that the work we're doing is helping improving student learning outcomes. This is from the students, the teachers, and the administration. We can prove that. Well, that's helping students to learn. That's a pretty impressive way to make an impact. We know the corporations we work with are more competitive. We can make them more competitive with what we do. And we know the governments, and we're really proud of this one. Our government customers, we're showing them how to use their existing furniture to reuse it instead of buying new furniture and saving tons of money for government. And if you're a taxpayer, this is good news for you.
Right.
So every year we're saving, and I mean this number literally, millions of dollars by reusing furniture they've had for 25, 30, 35 years that we sold, my grandfather sold, my father sold. That is just ugly. That's just ugly, but it still works.
Functional.
And so maybe it needs a new fabric or something to clean it up a little bit. It's much less expensive than going and buying all new furniture.
Wow.
That's making an impact in the community. So that's the fundamental things that we do day in, day out. Now, layered on top is a whole bunch of creative philanthropic ideas. Would you like to hear about those?
Yes, of course.
I feel like I've been talking a long time.
That's why you're here. This is all about you.
Well, I could come back, give you a little break there.
Oh,
because
good.
What you're talking about there is your higher purpose, which is one of the tenets and pillars of conscious capitalism, is that there's something there beyond just making a buck, and businesses have to make a profit to continue to do what they do, the good work they do. But having that higher purpose that employees can align around and feel good about participating, not just collecting a check at, every other Friday, that's powerful. It's really powerful.
And, absolutely.
And, so
there's a war for talent going on, and we want to attract the best and brightest. And people who have a sense that they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves find a home at Goodman's, and that's the kind of people we want.
That's great.
Okay.
Now you can go ahead. Was that enough of a break?
I actually ran to the bathroom.
Okay, but that was good.
I'm back now.
Long pause.
So I have challenged our company a bit to use our surplus assets, resources, and talent for the benefit of the community. If our purpose is to change the community, make an impact on the community, what surplus resources, assets, and talent do we have? So, for example, it's the way the office furniture industry works, not just in Phoenix, but around the world. When we go and deliver a desk and a chair to you, you almost always say, hey, thank you. Could you get rid of this old stuff for me? Could you just get this out of here? The way the business works is we just take that. Oh, thanks. We take that and we just sell it to somebody else. And that's 100% profit margin, right? Because our purpose is about the community, we don't have anything invested. That's not ours, right? So we take that and we put it in our warehouse and we make it available to any nonprofit for free to come
Wonderful.
In and take whatever it is they want, haul it away, or they can pay us to deliver it to them. And every day, I really mean every day, we have people, nonprofits coming in to get conference rooms and private offices and lobbies and whatever it is that they need. And taken away. There's like a 3-week backlog to get in there. We deal with hundreds of nonprofits every year, and we also repurpose millions of dollars of furniture every year that nonprofit. They can take their assets and reuse them for the benefit of their purpose, which is what it's all about. That's just one idea.
That's fantastic. It really is.
And how did the employee, think about how the employees feel when they see that going out to a nonprofit and where they're delivering it there and they know that they're,
It's very rewarding to be a part of it, sure. So in Tucson, an employee says to me one day, this goes back to 2009, she says, okay, we're here for the community. Yes. We should be the Foster Clothing Bank for Southern Arizona. Come again? What do you mean? She said, there's 4 Foster Clothing Banks in Phoenix. There's none in Tucson. And we have the warehouse and trucks and people who can fold and sort clothes. We should be the Foster Clothing Bank for Southern Arizona. We started then once a month setting up a pop-up shop, basically, with about 50 racks full of clothing in a community center once a month. And we get about 100 to 150 families come in on a Saturday. They take whatever they need, and then they leave. This past summer, not this summer, the previous summer, 2016, we built a 5,000-square-foot permanent boutique in our showroom. So now we don't have to do this pop-up shop stuff anymore. It's now there all the time. And so we have people coming in. You get a knock at the door in the middle of the night and someone hands you a 3-year-old and you have nothing. You're not prepared. You can come in and get clothes and toys and books and, strollers, whatever, all the paraphernalia that you need. And when you no longer have the child, you bring it back and somebody else will take good use of it.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's surplus assets, resources, and talent. A simpler example is we've got trucks driving all around town. We got ads that we run on KJZZ Morning Edition. And KJZZ is supported by Goodman's Interior Structure. Ah. Have you heard this?
That sounded really good.
Yeah, that was good. Is that your voice on the voiceover?
It's not. I've been trying to get that, but they won't let me.
Could be.
But we so there's something we're already spending the money on. So we put a little plug for Local for Big Believers and Local First community here. And so we put a little plug for Local First. On every truck, there's a sticker, and on every KJZZ tag, Goodman's is a proud supporter of Local First. I got lots more. We got all kinds of these things.
Well, and that is who you are, who your company is, and that help us draw the line to conscious capitalism. For the listeners who aren't familiar with conscious capitalism, bridge that gap for us.
Mm-hmm. So let me tell you a little bit more about my journey first, and then I'll get to that question. So this is the kind of business we're practicing for all these years. And in 2011, I heard on NPR again. This is the second mention of NPR. Mm-hmm. I heard a report on NPR about benefit corporations. And the benefit corporation, a new kind of corporation that exists for the purpose of supporting the community, environment, its people. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And it was like 5-something in the morning. And I went online, found it, and took the test. Like, 80 questions or something like that you got to go through. And, of course, I didn't have all the answers, but I just guessed as best I could. And we qualified. We qualified for, this is kind of cool. I then went back and took I got the real answers and was able to put them in. And we easily qualified. So in 2012, we became a certified benefit corporation. And in 2015, the state of Arizona legally recognized benefit corporations. So we are elected, if you go look at our filing, we are a B Corp, which means in our charter it says we do not just exist for the purpose of the shareholders. We exist for the purpose of the community, the environment, our people. And we have to prove it every 2 years under audit. And when I say under audit, I mean it's under audit. It's not fun. They came out did an on-site audit last summer, and it's brutal. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of documentation. But we do it not for the traditional reasons that I think a lot of other people do it. We were the first in Arizona. There's about 2,000 in the country, and I think there's about 10 or 11 in Arizona right now. We do it to attract talent. This is sort of our way of telling our prospective employees and current employees that we are who we say we are. This is not just a whitewash, that this is the real deal. It's a long, expensive process to go to be able to prove this thing. But, there's a lot of bullshit out there. I don't need to tell you, right? And so this is our way of distinguishing us. That's the B Corp. Well, once we were B Corp, then I learned about conscious capitalism.
Okay.
And it all seems to align. I describe benefit corps is a subset, basically, of conscious capitalism. And the Venn diagram, you can't be a B Corp without practicing conscious capitalism. Now, if you're going to start quizzing me about the four pillars and how, like, we do them all, we're comfortable, we do them all, but I haven't drawn the direct lines because I'm too busy being audited by the B Corp people to
I'm sure the things you're doing, we just talked about the culture and the follow-up and you're caring for your people and vendors, everyone, all the stakeholders, and certainly there's no doubt that you're a conscious leader and creating a conscious culture.
You just named all the pillars, right?
Yeah, I'm
pretty good at that level. I haven't been in a business in a leadership role beyond my own sole practitioner work where I've led people to do that.
The manufacturing company in Chicago was not not practice it this way?
No. We tried to. Again, the culture was a family business. And by family, I mean they cared about their people.
A lot of yelling at each other.
Well, that too. A couple of factions that didn't get along. I was kind of the one in the middle.
Oh, geez.
It wasn't my family. It was someone else's family. But they cared about their people and always did. And I think that was the foundation that kind of got away from that as the business grew. And it got harder and harder to, you know, go visit the plants and talk to all the people that had been there for 30 years and so forth. So there's a little bit of deterioration there that happened. But
yeah, well, it's the third generation will do that to you.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a fourth generation coming, or is that...
Clean your room, clean your room, clean your room. Three more. I had to get all seven in there.
Okay.
And once that's done, yes, they can come into the business, but not until.
Not until.
My daughter just graduated from ASU with a business degree from W.P. Carey, and my son is studying sustainability in business. And I would very much love to have them be part of what I'm doing because it's so exciting, and it's all around giving and being of service first. And yet, I know that I have to let them find their way back to me if they even choose to do that. I'm hopeful, but I also keep my mouth quiet. Yes, go get that job. Go land health insurance and all the things you need to do with whatever city you want to land in. And the door is open if you want to come back and be a business owner and do it with me. So, yes. And clean your room, clean your room, clean your room, clean your room.
While we're talking about your story, I did watch the video on the Sub and Substance talk that you did, your story. And I really wanted to get that on the radio here as far as how people could hear more of that, because that was really compelling. And you're a great speaker, and there was a lot more detail in that as well. That's where I got the piece of paper from the employee. What I did is I Googled Adam Goodman, Sum and Substance. And it popped up right there, and it's about, 12 or 15-minute video,
yep.
which was really nice. So now that it's on the air, people can hear that.
Go knock yourself out.
And go for it.
Or Bing or Yahoo, whatever your search engine of choice
is. Or whatever
it is. Let's not play favorites.
Okay.
But they can find it.
Yes.
They can find that. That's true. And the other talk you did was at Grand Canyon University. They sponsored a TEDx talk where you talked more about capitalism and again, maybe not conscious capitalism, the pillars and all, but you gave some thoughts on what capitalism is and how it's a force for good. Can you go down that path a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
For us?
It, you know, capitalism's got half the population thinks has a negative view of capitalism.
Yeah.
And it makes sense when you think about all the bad actors of Enron and BP and ExxonMobil and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. That gets all the headlines. It, to me, it goes to the question of what is the purpose of a business? And if you believe the purpose of a business is to maximize profits for shareholders, then it's going to encourage you to take a lot of shortcuts and do whatever you got to do to create value for the shareholders.
Somebody wins, somebody loses.
That's right. Dill, it doesn't even matter who it's just all we're looking out for is our own shareholders. That I think the definition of, first of all, that definition of capitalism is not an iron law. This is not discovered by Newton or something like that. This is just a guy wrote it in a magazine article in 1970. It's stunning to me. I think about this a lot. Like, what magazine article that's written today is going to have an impact for the next 50 years and
right.
change an entire way of thinking about anything? What? No magazine's got that kind of power. Well, the New York Times Sunday Magazine in September 1970 had that kind of power. And it was Milton Friedman wrote the article talking about the purpose of a business. The only purpose is to generate profits for shareholders. And anything else, he said, get this, anything else is robbing, stealing from the company.
Yeah.
So to me, the definition of capitalism is changing right in front of our eyes. And it's changing in two ways. One is the management is declaring who the stakeholders of the company are and what types of wealth they're going to create. And you can mix and match these two things, the stakeholders and the wealth. So stakeholders, yes, the shareholders absolutely, without a doubt, are an important stakeholder, have to be taken care of. We need to profit for them. There's a great expression from John Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods, who says, my body needs oxygen to survive. It doesn't mean the purpose of my body is to breathe oxygen. Similarly, my company needs profits to survive, but it doesn't mean the purpose of the company is to create profits.
Yeah.
So that's one stakeholder. The customers are a stakeholder. The employees are a stakeholder. The supply chain's a stakeholder. The environment's a stakeholder. Your community's a stakeholder. You got all these stakeholders you can think about. And what types of wealth do you want to create for them? Financial wealth is, we were kind of narrowly focused on for 50 years on financial wealth. But there's spiritual wealth and ecological wealth and physical wealth and mental wealth and on and on and on. And so when you start thinking about which stakeholder gets what type of wealth and how can this company help do that, it opens you up to a wide range of possibilities and starts taking you down. Look, it's a myth to me, this idea that the shareholders own the corporation. There's tests of ownership that fail when you start thinking about it this way. I won't go into all of it now, but it breaks down. It's not real ownership. They have a claim on the business. Shareholders have a claim, absolutely. But do they own it? No, not really. They don't really own it. Well, once you break that, you're open up to all kinds of possibilities.
You talk about the Friedman. That was the era that I went through school, undergraduate, got my MBA, and that was my training. That's why this has been so, I don't know what I call it, revelationary to me.
That's not a word. I'm going to stop you there.
Not a word.
Revelationary is not
refreshing?
A word.
Refreshing?
Revolutionary.
Revolutionary, yeah.
It's been a revelation.
No, but it was a revelation, so it was revelationary to me.
Hey, new word.
Edit that out, yes.
I make up words, but you knew what I meant, right?
I didn't know what you meant.
But we do have that little guideline we're going to be putting in here anyway with some
that's
new
right,
words. So
right.
We can add that
the
one.
Glossary.
The glossary, right.
So that was really my training, and as I was a manager and coming up the ranks. It was all about the shareholders and the corporate officers and making sure we made money. And, this has been a light turned on when I got involved here and certainly the Mac 6 folks and Scott and his people and then Conscious Capitalism. It's been, and then EOS, it's been amazing. Just the turning of the page for me and my background.
Wow,
and
what an
and
exciting journey for you.
It's been wild, yeah.
And for me, having come up through education, I was an assistant principal in Kyrene School District, years ago, late 80s, early 90s. And these kinds of conversations have always been a part of who I am as an educator and even conversations around stakeholders and that sort of thing in education. So when John and I met and we started talking about conscious capitalism and even having those conversations on air with Scott and Kyle McIntosh, who've brought conscious capitalism to Arizona, I don't have the language, as you pointed out, even for yourself, Adam. I don't know how to speak to the pillars, but it is just part of who I've always been in my career and how I've shown up to lead and guide and be a part of a bigger opportunity to serve the community. And the fun thing for me, coming from education and helping public schools shift from just assuming that parents are going to send their kids to public schools, but also this functionality around being a business as a school district was a big shift.
Serving customers, you mean?
Having to serve customers, mm-hmm. because at the time we were losing these students and these families to charter schools and private schools. And I'm not making either of those a wrong choice, but as a public school administrator, it was important that we looked at it through the eyes of a business lens as opposed to, I'm putting air quotes up, public education. And we had to begin to have that conversation. And how do you blend that? How do you continue to serve and provide quality education and look at this as an opportunity to have an income and to increase the viability of a school district from a business perspective. And educators, much like, you know, public office holders, often don't think through that lens. It feels like it's something very different.
Speaking of the education, Conscious Capitalism Arizona has several initiatives, but one of those is to get in front of the next generation of business leaders, college students, high school and college age students, even younger, to share the message of conscious capitalism or capitalism as a force for good. And Randy Gibb over at GCU has actually incorporated the concepts into some of his curriculum. And their business program includes that, which is pretty cool. And you did a TED talk over there, a TEDx talk, which I referred to. And I'm going to make another plug here, just so people can get to that. If you Google or however you get to it, Adam Goodman, TEDxGCU, that pops up. And again, another 15 minutes of great wisdom,
sheer delight,
and sharing that too. And you look so comfortable on stage there with the light shining down in front of students. That was that's an audience of college students, was it?
College
primarily?
Students, exactly. Yeah. You know, what's going on at Grand Canyon is really fantastic. They are leading the country in terms of incorporating conscious capitalism, not only in the classroom, not only in the curriculum, but the business itself is really organized that way. It's really an exciting model, and they're, mark my words, they will be a beacon for the rest of the education industry, not just education, but the entire for corporations, the way they're doing it right.
Right.
One of the other shows that falls under the Just Good Business category with Mech 6 Studio is Jody Lowe's with UN Improved, and she just had Randy on last week, so we're getting ready to turn that into a podcast, and we'll have that available this week sometime. So it was fascinating. It was my first opportunity to get to hear from him specifically.
Yep. Randy. Sign me up. I will subscribe to that podcast.
Yeah, it was great. Just Google it, or Bing, or whatever else you'd like to do to find it.
Yeah, Randy also serves on the board of Conscious Capitalism Arizona, as does Adam and myself, and some other really good folks, and we're gonna get them on the radio over the next few months to get their stories as well. So
radio, we call it radio.
It's radio.
Well, yeah, it is. It's internet radio, and then we have the benefit of turning it into a podcast as well. Part of, I think, the appeal when John had Scott McIntosh on was that we really are around sharing a great story, right? To hear about Goodman's background and your own personal experience and how that relates to conscious capitalism and really how you're serving our community. It's these stories that have to be told. And so when John had Scott on, Scott's like, okay, how does this all work? Remember him? And we were sitting in our studio at today we're live at a remote location, but in the studio, it's like, tell me how this all works. I just love this.
He's an engineer.
Right, exactly. And then the idea was born for the studio to be moved over to Mach 6 to continue to tell the story. He has a goal to tell 1,000 stories of conscious capitalism business owners here in Arizona specifically. And what better way through audio, radio, podcasting, the content is already there. And it's that engaging conversation versus maybe being interviewed more, you know, script and, hey, let me jot down all the notes.
Right. Yeah. This is a great forum. I was a guest of another sponsor, Joe Puz, PMO Squad. They do project management. They actually train and hire veterans to do outsourced project management work.
Cool.
So he had me on, and I talked about what I did, basically 45 or 50 minutes of just what I do, which was awesome. And Karen and I got together after that. I said, I really like this. And so we came up with the show, and I've been doing it three, four, five shows now, and I kind of like it. So
excellent.
I'm glad you're able to join us here today.
But there's a plug. I got a plug. Can I plug something?
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
I'll be appearing Tuesdays and Thursdays at... No, that's not my plug.
I was listening attentively.
Stand-up Tempe. No.
My plug is... So here's something exciting in the early stages we're working on. It's something called Do-Gooders. Do-GoodersAZ.com. You don't even have to Google it. You can just put that directly in the navigation bar, Do-GoodersAZ.com. And we are looking to recruit locally owned businesses. That's an important part. And each business identifies a do-gooder in the community, somebody who works for a nonprofit, either volunteer or an employee of a nonprofit, somebody that inspires them, they think is really doing impactful work. They go on the Do-Gooders website. They put why this person is so impactful. And then they give that person a gift. The gift is what the gift is immaterial. We're giving away a Herman Miller chair because that's what we do. Right. But a lot of people are giving away a gift certificate for dinner or what happens. Again, it's not the gift. It's the act. Here's the cool part. That do-gooder that they've just identified then goes and identifies the next do-gooder, someone that inspires them. And then the company gives them the same gift. So we got today we just got our second do-gooder. And so she's going to get a Herman Miller chair. Now she gets to pick the next do-gooder. And the idea is this serendipitous identification of who all these great people doing great work in the community are and the business community getting exposed to all these people. It's pretty exciting. So we're looking to grow the number of businesses. So any businesses who want to participate, please, you can sign up on the website. And hopefully what we see is these threads of do-gooders are going to start intersecting and people getting multiple acknowledgments. And if all this works, the nonprofit community and the business community in Phoenix get to know each other better and deeper, and perhaps we can move the needle on contributions, philanthropic contributions from corporations.
Right. So do-gooder, AZ.
Do-gooders, plural, AZ.com.
And a business owner, or who's nominating?
So the givers are companies. So they're local.
In the company name, sure, okay. And looking for a nonprofit leader or nonprofit organization.
They start with their favorite one.
Love it. Oh, I can already think of.
It doesn't need to be a nonprofit person, or it does.
It does.
To be an employee or volunteer of a nonprofit. The do-gooder is a.
Got it.
Love it.
And the giver is a corporation. So Fairy Tale Brownies is a giver. And they've identified their first person, and they're giving brownies naturally, right? So this person got a couple dozen brownies, and the beautiful things that they say that when you get the chance to honor somebody and why they inspire you, it's beautiful stuff. So they wrote why, and now this person is going to turn around and take with that same care and thoughtfulness and write about somebody else, and we're just going to watch this thing snake its way through the city.
Fantastic.
That's a great plug. That's great. Yeah.
And it's got the word good in it.
It's got good.
You can use it because it's yours. Word anyway.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
You are catching on.
Right. Is there going to be a quiz after this?
There could be. Yeah. So this has been really a good conversation, and
you just did it again. It's good. This is my work. It's been great or mediocre, but you can't say good.
The use of good in this broadcast has been authorized by
right. We're gonna
without express written consent of Goodman's.
I should talk faster though, because is there anything else? What haven't we covered here that would be good to get out there? I love the do-gooders AZ comment. That'll get people interested. For sure. So,
I think we covered covered me pretty well.
Awesome.
I feel like I have shared everything I have to share.
Awesome. Well, it's been great. And how can folks get in touch with you if they care to do that?
Send me an email, adamgoodman@goodmans.com.
Okay.
That number again, adamgoodman@goodmans.com.
That's easy enough.
Yes.
And I would also plug for Conscious Capitalism Arizona, consciouscapitalismaz.com. is the website for Conscious Capitalism in Arizona. There's a lot of good content there. Some benefits if you join, and no pressure, but we have a members meeting every third Wednesday of the month. People get together. Then we call it our tribe gets together and work, play together and get together. So anybody interested can follow up there too as well.
And of course, we have the big International Conscious Capitalism Conference coming in April 2019.
Have we already been allowed to say that now?
Whoops.
We've already done it before Scott did it, so if it's okay for him.
Really, I'm teasing, because when Scott was on with us, he's like, I'm not supposed to say this, but I'm going to anyway. coming here to Arizona.
I think they announced it at the conference that was back in April, so now it's out. A lot of planning to do there, a great opportunity for people to get involved, because I know there's going to be a lot
to see this as a catalyst to get hundreds of local businesses engaged and get them on the radar. There's going to be a lot of people flying in from all over the country. That's wonderful.
Internationally, too.
We'd love to see
beef it up here.
The Phoenix community come on out. So we're spreading the word. We Goodmans now. We have been, for the past 18 months, anybody who comes into our office and does a tour of the office, we give about an hour-long tour of the office. That includes talk about conscious capitalism, but a lot of furniture talk, too, because, that's what we sell. But we give them a Conscious Capitalism book. We've given away, I don't know, like 1,200 Conscious Capitalism books to people trying to get that word out there and spread the word and get the Phoenix business community to think differently about business.
I think that's more books given away than even Mac 6 has done. So that it's a contest. But.
No, but Business Radio X, we're joining in that. Kyle had shared with me recently that because we will have a Mac 6 studio there, we will be doing the same thing. So whether it's guests on Business Radio X that are related to and already in kind of the CCAZ or Mac 6 community will receive a book, but we're going to open that up to the guests that I have on as well. Because why not? In fact, I did a broadcast at the Sheraton Crescent Hotel on Saturday, I mentioned before we went live, with Arizona Toastmasters. And there was a father-son couple, call them couple for lack of a better word, who own, I believe it's a tax company, and they were running for office with Toastmasters. And as I was listening to them have the conversation around why Toastmasters is so important to them and how they've grown their business and really how they function, after we got off air, I said, are you familiar with Conscious Capitalism? And do you know Mac 6, the folks over at Mac 6? And they didn't. And so there has to be an introduction. They have already read the book.
Nice.
And whatever the first book is around Conscious Capitalism, I'm now forgetting. But
well, there's a book by Jeff Klein, It's Just Good Business, that's how we came up with our name,
right.
Or just Conscious Capitalism, the yellow book.
Firms of Endearment, maybe? That's
I don't remember, but their eyes got real wide, and I said, listen, this is part of why I want to have the studio at Mac 6 and be part of this movement.
Cool.
Because more folks who are already functioning that way need to be able to have more presence and work with like-minded business owners, in addition to perhaps even businesses who aren't functioning that way right now. And it's that, you know, that light bulb moment kind of that Scott describes for himself, that, you know, it's time to show up and interact a little bit differently.
That's a recap of what we're trying to do, for
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
You're a pro. That was good.
Well, I'm getting there.
Really, for sure. Thanks.
One of these days I'll have my badge of honor. Actually, Business Radio X has become a corporate member because of our partnership, so I'm very much looking forward to getting to know the community and finding how
support.
I can serve.
That's
thrilled
great.
To be there.
Yeah,
anything else you'd like to add, John?
I don't think so. I just want to thank Adam again for spending time with us, and Karen for you sitting in on the mic as well, of just producing. More fun to participate, I think, and you did a great job. Appreciate that. So
I always like to be here with you or have you here with us, however it works.
Right.
So thank you. Great to meet you, and looking forward to getting to know you better through, obviously, our relationship with Mac 6 and Conscious Capitalism, and now Goodman Furniture. Yes, excellent.
Nice.
You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio on Business Radio X. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.